Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This week, the Rascals mince about the Dallas sniper attack, police shootings across America, Trump's latest slam to Senator Mark Kirk, and Clinton's free pass from the FBI.
Today is Friday. It's July 8th, 2016, and this is the Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams. Remember, you can hear this podcast on my Saturday show, which begins at 1 p.m. We broadcast this in part at 1:30 on Saturday afternoons. And now to round out the roundtable, here's Eric Zorn.
Yeah, the roundtable is just looking like a little small diner table right now, a little round table where we're just the two of us. Kristen's on vacation, and I think Bertrand is traveling, right?
So. Yeah, Steve Bertrand's going to be away for a few weeks. Kristen McQueary has decided that someplace else pays better. Yeah,
once again, her family is taking precedence over the Mincing Rascals, and I just don't understand.
We are her family. And Eric Zorn, you can read in the Chicago Tribune. He's a three-times-a-week columnist. You can read him online every day. Three times a week or four times a week?
I'm three times a week and trying to figure out right now what to say about what happened last night in Dallas. It's just hard to process, isn't it?
Latest videos of police killing black men, one from Louisiana, one from Minnesota, sparked protests across the country this week. And at a rally in Dallas, snipers opened fire, killing five police officers, wounding seven others, making Thursday, July 7th, 2016, the deadliest day for law enforcement in this country since 9/11. Before the Dallas killings, President Obama said that we have to keep trying to do better. He said a society still so close to its segregated past will have vestiges of racism, but we have to do better. And I'll add that any more than the actions of a few officers speak for officers everywhere, the actions of a few gunmen don't speak for black America. The score was not settled yesterday afternoon or evening. Everyone lost, Governor Rauner said.
Yeah.
One last point here, Eric, and then please jump in. Governor Rauner said all of these events speak to the lack of unity and trust in many of our communities and underscores the urgency in addressing that lack of trust. He could have been talking about politics there, but the point is taken. And my question for you, Eric, it's unanswerable, is where does the healing begin? What's the next step supposed to be?
Well, we certainly have gotten further away from any resolution of the tension between African-Americans and police officers with what happened in Dallas. You know, you said snipers. As we're recording, it's unclear to me whether there was more than one sniper. The police said that the guy whom they killed with a bomb, after negotiating with him for several hours, had said that he had acted alone, and they identified him as an African-American man who was a loner. So we really don't know whether this was just looked like, because of the flurry of gunfire, it appeared to be a bunch of snipers. I'm always hesitant to read too much into the actions of one or a few people who are crazed like this, who would commit an act like this. The protest in Dallas, the protests in Oakland, in I think probably in Minneapolis, right? You guys must have had some up there.
St. Paul,
St. Paul, and in Chicago were peaceful. And these peaceful protests were drawing attention to and highlighting and raising awareness of this problem that there is between the African-American communities, lack of trust between African-American community and police officers. This shooting, whatever's in the minds of these people who did this, makes that problem much, much harder to solve. And you could see that on social media last night. People were, you know, Joe Walsh, the former congressman, was acting like this was first shots in a race war. I mean, it was just, you know, the response of people, the anger, the fact that all of a sudden this issue that was raised by these two shootings this past week, the police shootings, is just completely off the table now. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about this horrible thing in Dallas. And they say senseless killings, and these may be just senseless killings.
The very definition of it. But, you know, if you do go back to Louisiana and Minnesota for just a minute, the latest two videos of officers shooting and killing black men under circumstances that are a little gray, there is something there.
Oh, right? Absolutely. No, I didn't mean to suggest that there wasn't. So, I mean,
No. And, you know, in my own introduction to this piece, I said, let's not judge officers by the actions of a few. But I don't love that introduction or that part of it, because I do think there is something endemic. There's something, if not racist, and I don't know that that's it per se, but there's something angry. There's something hard about the way the police interact with their communities right now, and that needs to change. And I don't know how, when, or, you know, and they say, well, we need better police training. Like, tell me the course that's going to take that out of the cop. Tell me the course that's going to make that easy.
Well, I mean, I think there are some things that can be done, and there were some examples. People were actually saying that Dallas was a place where they had worked a lot on de-escalation, because one of the problems is you get into these situations and everybody's temperature goes up, and the police officers are the ones with the experience and ostensibly with the training. You're supposed to know how to bring the temperatures down to cool things off. Now,
yeah.
You know, I mean, we don't know exactly what happened in the shooting in up by St. Paul, but it looks like the police officer overreacted, that he emptied his gun before actually being threatened, and that seems to me to be a training issue or a procedural issue. I mean, there does seem to me to be some things that you can do, some steps you can take. And I'm certainly thinking about that. But I don't know what you can do to control or stop, you know, people who are just, you know, sort of out of their minds doing this crazy idea. I mean, it's a crazy idea. If you're supporting Black Lives Matter, which is what the gunman allegedly told the police, that he was in support of Black Lives Matter. He was angry at what the police had done in these other two cases that we talked about, and he wanted to kill white people. I don't think that you can't make some sort of a policy change that's going to make these crazy people sane again. You know, it's like that's going to happen. We see it in Orlando. We see it in the other places. I mean, we can talk about gun control. I don't think that that's a politically realistic answer to this, but you can talk about some of these issues between police and communities. Look where they're doing it well. You can make some steps in that area. And the terrible thing about what happened in Dallas is that it makes those kind of solutions harder to reach. It makes those conversations harder to have. It makes that understanding
harder. Well, I don't sense in the black community. I mean, I'm a white guy. I live in Southwest Minneapolis. I don't pretend to be connected. But what I'm reading and what I'm hearing is not jubilation on the black community's part, right? They're not saying, oh, good, I haven't seen Black Lives Matter say, well, somebody did our bidding for us. He doesn't represent BLM or Black America any more than a shooter in Orlando represented Islam. It's just a dereliction is all it is.
Right. And this is the danger of reading too much into, you know, any greater significance. I don't think this signifies the beginning of a...
Well, then what's Joe Walsh? Let me just... I just want to read the tweet, and, you know, it maybe I shouldn't, because it perhaps does not deserve the attention I'm about to give it. But this is a syndicated talk show host in America and major markets.
So, and a former congressman.
Congressman from Illinois, now talk show host Joe Walsh, apparently not drunk, tweeted last night, 3 Dallas cops killed, 7 wounded. This is now war. Watch out, Obama. Watch out, Black Lives Matter. Punks, real America is coming after you. He later took down the tweet, apparently thinking that makes it go away. At 10:56 last night, Eric, it had 130 likes, more than I got for adorable pictures of my wiener dog. And he continued to defend it, saying, I wasn't calling for violence against Obama or anyone. Obama's words and BLM's deeds have gotten cops killed. Okay, really? Can you explain? I don't know that he can explain that to me.
That point of view is something that is at least debatable. I mean, you can talk about that if you want to go out and say, I mean, he did, and some of his subsequent tweets have been, you know, this is all Obama's fault. This is, you know, and I don't think that makes any sense. But there's a menace and a threat, an implicit threat to that first tweet, the one you read, the one that he took down. that I mean, the reason he took it down is the Secret Service would have been at his door, maybe is today. I mean, you don't say
real America's coming after you. Watch out, Obama. Watch out, BLM punks.
Yeah,
real America is coming after you. That's insightful.
Yeah, we'll see if our local talk show station here that hosts him has the integrity to take him off the air. But
I was wondering about
I
that.
Doubt
maybe
it.
His. Well, maybe you know that's why I say guys like him give me a bad name. I do a talk show too, and I'm all about trying to say something provocative and clever. I understand that, but hate and stupidity like that are very easy buttons to push. And at some point, yeah. You have to say, "Don't I have some sort of responsibility here too?"
But this idea that you just knee jerk blame this on President Obama, and Obama has been fairly measured in his response to these things. Nothing he said has been incendiary, I don't think. And the truth is that he is reacting to stories that are very troubling and a pattern that's very troubling. And, you know, what are you supposed to do? What would Joe Walsh do? Keep making excuses for police officers who fire their guns too quickly? I mean, that's not leadership. That's, you don't want to enable this. You want this to stop. You want police to use deadly force only when it's necessary, not because they can't subdue somebody quickly enough.
So what is real America? I'm not sure what real America is. Is that code for white America or the wealthy America? I don't know what real America is. I don't know who they are. And is coming after you, meaning President Obama and Black Lives Matter, what do you, you know, that's not just rhetoric. People read that. What do you think these other rogue shooters have been reading and being influenced by? You put something like that out there and somebody says, okay, they feel it's like a call to arms and they act out. I don't think too much to suggest that if you think President Obama's responsible for stuff, Mr. Walsh, be careful what you say, because people are reading your words and there's unstable people out there. Stop it already.
Yeah, Joe Walsh is irresponsible. And I mean,
he was in the Congress not that long ago.
I know. But, you know, it's part of it is, you're right, his bread and butter as a provocative right-wing talk show host. I
mean, all right, fine. So Donald Trump called Illinois Senator Mark Kirk a loser this week. Kirk failed to attend a meeting with Trump and Republican senators. Mr. Trump actually said that he's going to win Illinois in the presidential election. Kirk said that he'll probably come in about the same percentage as Alan Keyes got. Haven't heard that name in a while, when he ran against Barack Obama for U.S. Senate, which would be about 27%. Tammy Duckworth, the Democrat, is criticizing Mark Kirk today for not attending that meeting with the Senate and with Donald Trump. She said that's not leadership, and she says his dance in and out of Donald Trump's camp is kind of ludicrous. My question to you, Eric, is what's a Mark Kirk to do? Should he have gone to that meeting with his fellow Republican senators and given Trump a piece of his mind, or should he have stayed out of the room because the association is too toxic?
Well, he has already laid down his marker on the other side of the line from Trump. He's criticized him strongly. He's refused to endorse him. And so it would have been hypocritical of him, I think, maybe he should have gone to the meeting and spoken out. I think Ben Sasse did.
Yeah,
and
right.
Some of the other senators who have been critical of Trump. Maybe he should. Maybe it was cowardly of him not to go there and engage with Trump. But, you know, the campaign he's running is one of the most confounding Republican campaigns I've ever seen. He's emphasizing his Democratic bona fides, right? He's talking about how he's pro-choice, how he favors a meeting with Merrick Garland. I think he favors a confirmation vote. I mean, yep. I don't think he's going to vote, and doesn't say he's going to vote for him, but he favors a vote on Merrick Garland. That he's stressing in his ads how much he is like the Democrats in Illinois. Very strange. And it's what's surprising to me is that the other Republicans in the state have not been harder on him, and in fact did not seriously challenge him at the primary stage.
Yeah. Well, what's a Republican in Illinois to do? You know what I mean? I mean, are you suggesting he's hypocritical or he's not a true conservative or Republican? I think that's what a Republican should sound like in Illinois, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think certainly there's a tradition in Illinois, like Jim Edgar, people like that, who are very, very mainstream moderate Republicans. Edgar was also pro-choice on the abortion issue. And those Republicans have tended to do better. You know, you look at, you know, people say that Illinois is a solidly blue state, and it's actually fairly close when you look at all the counties and you look at all the votes that were cast for state senators and state reps. It's not, you know, we're, you know, there's this huge imbalance in the General Assembly, but that has, that's an artifact of how the maps are drawn, that it's very close to, like, you know, it's right around 50% either way.
Really?
It's a purple state. It's not a
I'm surprised
deep
to hear
blue
that.
State. And, well, and of course, Bruce Rauner won the gubernatorial election with 51% of the vote. It's not inconceivable that Trump could get a whole lot of support downstate and do pretty well. It's unlikely. I don't think the Republicans are seriously going to spend.
Oh, he'll
a lot
do
of time
fine around. Downstate. But do you think? What I guess? What percent? None of us thought that Trump was going to be the nominee at first, and I was the last to get on the bus. But here it's coming down the middle of the road right at me. So I'm just going to ask you, what percentage of the vote in Illinois will Donald Trump get?
Oh, let's. Well, we want to just guess this. I'm going to say.
Yeah, sure. We don't know. I thought. I still think
Rubio's
going to be the candidate.
I'm going to say 45.
That's amazing. Think about that.
I mean, it is. Well, but
Hillary Clinton kind of is from Illinois too, you know, and it's just amazing the depth of hatred people have for Hillary Clinton that somebody like Trump surfaces and 45%, in your estimation, of a blue state would vote for Donald Trump, which is to say vote against Hillary Clinton. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
I mean, the thing that was probably going to help Hillary Clinton more in Illinois than the fact that she was born in Park Ridge is that Barack Obama is four square behind her, and he's very popular, not just in Illinois, but right now around the country. His favorability ratings are above 50%, which is very unusual for a president at this stage.
He got a second term, yeah.
Yeah, and got a very good economic report on Friday morning. So things could be good for Hillary Clinton in Illinois for those reasons. I don't think the fact that she was born here has a whole lot to do with it. But
not that it matters that much, but President Clinton, pardon me, Bush.
Whichever.
President Obama is still very popular abroad. Not that Canada represents the whole world, but we were moved to tears at my house when we saw the round of applause that the president got in Canada last week and the chant from their parliament, four more years. Talk about an emotional roller coaster. Can you imagine what it is like for the Obamas? I'm sure Michelle and the girls just have circled on their calendar, on their refrigerator, you know, the election day and the exit date next year for their family, because this has to have been difficult for them the last few years.
It has. I continue to maintain that his legacy will be favorable, and that history will smile on these 8 years and we'll look at his stewardship as being mostly favorable and mostly smart and strong.
I've been
obviously not perfect, but
a lot of mistakes he's made of late. Literally, maybe because we're getting towards the end of his term. But yeah, he's made some calculations and they were wrong. But it's obvious what some of his signature pieces are. And I just think as a transitional figure in American history, you're darn right Barack Obama's going to be remembered favorably. This was not an easy time for a black man to be president of the United States. And I think regardless of the color of his skin, Eric, don't you, that the times he has spoken to us as a nation from his bully pulpit, He's done a very good job. Some people are put off by that, but I sure have not been. He's had too many sad things to talk about and things for us to try and put in perspective. And I think he's been a really important mouthpiece for a lot of those issues.
Yeah, I agree. I think that his presence is going to be missed, and especially if the president is Donald Trump, you'll see what it's like to have.
Can you imagine the whiplash? In fact, what do you think of this, Eric? I was talking about this with my wife the other day. I said, this is just a rhetorical conversation I've been having with myself, but I've been having it with myself. If Donald Trump got elected, suppose I could find a radio station in Sweden that would have me, or, I don't know, somewhere else. You know how people say, if X wins, I'm out of here? I'm thinking, okay, what if I just got out of here? And then after 4 years, say, or 8 years, Donald Trump is no longer president, and I say, okay, I'm going to come back in. Would that act of going away when times got tough and then coming back when he's gone, would that seem principled, or would that seem as though you're abandoning ship when we needed you the most? I wonder what the right
my gut tells me that it is someone in your position, someone who was a thought leader, who is, you know, talking sense to the world. And when you abdicate, when you go to, you know, Sweden and do the meatball hour or whatever you would do there, we're going to need to have. Here we are looking forward to a Trump presidency. We're going to need to have a strong, loyal opposition, a patriotic opposition to what he does. If everybody who disagrees with him leaves, that only ultimately strengthens him. So don't go, John. I mean, you're close.
The meatball hour is sounding good, though.
You're close to Canada up there.
I think, among other things, people could fault you for not having participated economically in the well-being of the country you're returning to. You know, if you're paying property taxes in Canada or Sweden or someplace, income taxes, etc. I mean, you know, you're right to say nothing of your own sort of intellectual input or physical input, just being in the country that is struggling that you're from. I guess the principal thing is to stay, but you almost feel like the statement is, this isn't my country anymore. This isn't the one that I thought I knew. I'm going to go. I mean, that, I understand the logic of that as well. I hope if I decide to go host the Meatball Hour, you'll at least understand that I was acting on some principle, if not the one you articulated.
We can still do the Mincing Rascals, the international version of the Mincing Rascals.
Real quick, Hillary Clinton. I mean, so fourth down in our line of stories today is the fact that the FBI and the Justice Department are going to give Hillary Clinton a pass. What's your reaction to that?
Well, James Comey is the FBI director, has Republican bona fides. He is a man of unquestioned integrity and knowledge of the law. He looked at this case and decided that there was not a criminal charge to be brought against Hillary Clinton.
He's a Republican, by the way.
He is, and Republicans were all about him and his integrity until he didn't make the decision the way they wanted him to. They called him up at Capitol Hill yesterday and gave him a grilling, and he was pretty strong in defending his decision, which is that, you know, she was very, very careless with her email, but that this did not rise to the level of a criminal offense. The Republicans are not going to let this go. I think that, you know, there's this saying in the military, which is that when you're fighting in battles, that it is better in some ways to wound your enemy rather than to kill your enemy. Because when you wound an enemy, then the enemy has to devote several other soldiers to caring for the wounded, and it burns up all kinds of resources that your enemy might need for other things. The analogy here is that Hillary Clinton is now a more wounded candidate than she was before because of the lengthy and blistering assessment from James Comey of all the things that she did and all the misstatements, lies that she told along the way. Mm-hmm. And if he had indicted her, he doesn't have the power to indict her, but if he had recommended an indictment and then the Department of Justice had accepted that recommendation and indicted her, the Democrats have time to, obviously, to withdraw her candidate. She would have had to withdraw, clearly. And then they would have been able to appoint somebody else. As much as Bernie Sanders supporters would have liked it to be him, it probably would not have been. It would have been Joe Biden, would be my guess. And I think Biden would be a tougher general election candidate against Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton's going to be. So I think I think that would have been actually bad news for the Republicans. They would have been high-fiving and doing their little touchdown dances, but that Hillary Clinton is maybe the only candidate the Democrats have who could lose to Donald Trump because people don't like her so much, and this adds to the dislike people have for her. So,
yeah, it's funny because the Bernie numbers were always better against Trump than the Hillary numbers.
We've talked about that before. I think a lot of that was just because Bernie Sanders has not been the subject of 25 years of relentless attacks from the right-wing media and from Republicans. And as soon as they trained their fire on him and pulled out votes that he's taken and looked at little wrinkles in his past, he would have been brought down to size. So
yeah, that's 2 weeks in a row, by the way, Eric, that you've said that you really think if Hillary were indicted that they would have pulled their candidacy or she would have opted out.
You can't have a candidate under indictment.
Her husband was impeached and served.
But he wasn't reelected.
No, he could not have been. I'll bet Bill Clinton could get elected tomorrow, don't you think?
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, we'll never know, I guess. Well, of course we won't. But, I mean, I would imagine that given the ego and the momentum of Hillary Clinton, she would not have stepped aside. You would have had to, what's she going to do, bake cookies?
Well, but there is this option that, that the parties have, and the Republicans are currently exploring it, which is that, you know, when you go into these conventions, you set the rules. And the rules traditionally follow the rules that people have understood all through the primary process, but they don't have to. And so this thing that the Republicans are, some of the Republicans are trying to engineer at the rules meeting, which I believe is next week, is they're going to try to introduce a conscience clause into the rules, which mean, which says that the delegates are allowed to vote their conscience at the convention. They don't have to vote
for Republicans.
The Republicans, yes, the Republicans, and the Democrats could have done something like that. They're not going to. The Republicans might. There's a fairly strong sentiment to do it. That has to. They have to get a quarter of the votes in the Rules Committee, and then they take it to the floor of the convention. They have to get more than 50% of the delegates.
Why in the world would they do that?
Why? Because Donald Trump is, you know, as one of my colleagues said this morning, he is one Heil Hitler away from being kicked off the ticket, you know, from being completely unacceptable to the electorate. And, you know,
but how does that play out for a delegate then? So with that clause in your back pocket, if you vote not for Trump, that's going to be a vote for Hillary. If you do vote for Trump, armed with this conscience clause, it means that you not only see him as a political necessity, but that you are you're conscientiously on board with him. Well, why give yourself that headache? You don't need that.
Well, the problem they have is there's not another candidate who is sitting out there who is really, really appealing to the, you know, mainstream Republican voters right now. There's nobody who thought, if only we had X. I mean, they don't even have their version of Joe Biden, I don't think. Maybe Mitt Romney is someone who could come in and just sort of be the mainstream candidate, but Mitt Romney is fairly establishment. I don't think you would go with a Ted Cruz. I don't think.
How about Paul Ryan?
I don't know about Paul Ryan anymore.
He keeps saying no, but you know.
I mean, that was my thought.
He's been the conscious voice. He's been the sort of, you know, grandfather to this whole thing. He's been the one telling Trump to settle down all along.
Yeah, although I got to say, his response to the Hillary Clinton exoneration from the FBI has been churlish and unimpressive. I think that the Republicans need to let this play out. They're going to keep having these hearings, and at some point, maybe already, the public's going to say, look, enough already with our damn emails. You know, they're going to echo Bernie Sanders. Like, let's not talk this email thing. Yeah, she was careless with this. We know why she was careless with this. She's not a traitor to her country. She's not trying to give secrets to the Russians or you know, to...
You don't know that.
Of course we know that. She's not.
You don't
know
that.
She's just paranoid. She's
Bill
paranoid.
Clinton bribed the attorney general on that airplane. He probably had a black suitcase full of hundreds. He got on the airplane. They talked nice. He got off the airplane. Did you see him with a black suitcase? I don't think you did.
I did not.
He probably left the money for Loretta Lynch. She has the money now, and that's how this thing was paid for.
Well, you're just trying to get Joe Walsh's job if that station cans him.
So. No. Well, I'm reading Donald Trump's tweet. He said that I don't remember if it was a tweet or a statement, but Trump suggested that Bill Clinton bribed the attorney general, and that's how that deal was done.
It was the whole thing with me, and we talked about this last week. But the meeting with Loretta Lynch was just such an unforced error by the Clintons, and then the fact that they were, I guess they told the New York Times that it was certainly possible that they could keep her on as attorney general if Hillary's elected. It all sounds wrong. And the Clintons, okay. You know, this is the Clintons. This is why when she ran in 2008 and now again, I'm just having this feeling like I've had so much of their madness. And
I'm going to make you feel better, Eric. Both parties should run Joakim Noah. Here's part of his letter, which he published, which was published in the Chicago Tribune, I presume, right? I've been reading it online.
Exclusively.
Was it exclusively?
It was supposed to be. I don't know.
Well, he said, thank you, Chicago. I won't read it all. You've probably seen it before, but just listen. This is how you exit a city. This is how, in fact, you have a career. Thank you, Chicago. I moved here 9 years ago and quickly got an understanding for what the city was about. Hard work, no nonsense, grind, loyalty, passion. I wanted to represent those qualities every time I stepped onto the court and competed for the Bulls. Thank you to every teammate I battled with. You are all my brothers. The relationships I made in Chicago go far beyond basketball, and to me that is just as big as winning the championship. I wish the people in Chicago nothing but the best, and I hope we can continue to be united in bringing some peace to the city. The work to bring people together and build positivity throughout the neighborhood will continue through my foundation and many other foundations throughout the city that my family and I will stay involved with. And finally, he wrote, I will continue to do my best to help this city. Chicago is home for the rest of my life, and my dream is still to help make the city a safer place for kids to grow up in. Thank you, Joakim Noah. Wasn't that beautiful?
It was, and I got nothing bad to say about the guy. He was, he worked.
Well, we don't have to think
he worked
something bad.
No,
to say,
I mean,
right?
It's like I don't have anything cynical to say. Or I mean, I think
well, even that.
I know. I try though. This is my job to be cynical and critical.
No,
but you know, I mean, he is a big-hearted guy, and he played really, really hard when he played, and with a lot of passion. And he did. He did make Chicago his home, and he did do a lot of selfless work here, and. We're going to miss
him. Wore his emotions on his sleeve.
Yeah.
You never had the feeling that he was just sitting out because he was weak or didn't want to play or was just taking the money. If ever a player's personality matched the city that he was playing for, you'd be hard-pressed to find one who wasn't a better fit. And I remember when we first drafted him, we thought, what is this?
Yeah, I think it was Morrissey, one of the sports columnists, said if this guy ever, if he ever scores in double figures, I'll eat this column or something. And then there was this ceremony they had a couple of years later where he took the column and shredded it up and put it into like a pasta sauce and ate it. And he was just, and of course Noah was very classy and funny about it. So, yeah he's a good guy. It's too bad that with pro sports, these guys move around so much now that you just don't have athletes that are identified with cities for that long. I mean, we lost Derrick Rose, and I know Derrick Rose was not nearly the personality that Noah was. And Miami's lost Dwayne Wade, and he's coming here, and all these guys just move around. They're mercenaries. LeBron James going back and forth.
Mercenaries.
Yeah.
If the San Francisco Chronicle offered you $7 million for 2 years, would you take it?
They could offer me quite a bit less than that. But I'm not. I guess maybe I am a beloved figure in town. No, I don't think so. But I mean, it's like these guys become so much part of our town's identity, and then they move on. And it's,
well, and the thing is, we all say this. Those of us who've never been offered $7 million for 2 years, but at some point, enough is enough, and you ought to keep your kids in their schools and stay in your city. But that neglects, I think, a couple of things, one of which is the desire by these people to win a championship, A, and B, an extra $10 million is an extra $10 million.
Of course, there are instances where players will take less money to stay somewhere if they think they're going to win a championship. Because, first of all, it's fun to win a championship. And what are you going to do with all that extra money? If it's, a couple million dollars in the long run, what difference does it make when you're talking, when your salary's in the tens of millions of dollars anyway? And there's also some residual benefits from winning a championship. You get, endorsements and that kind of thing. And that
can
maybe make up that money.
Yeah, your car dealership probably has a higher percentage of sales. Let's conclude today's podcast with our usual recommendations, things that we are watching, listening to, reading, or consuming that we think you should at least check out. Eric, you want to go first, or
I got somebody else
on the panel?
I have two. I'll do one for Bertrand and one for me. One of them is there's a new podcast called More Perfect that I recommend people check out. It's about the Supreme Court, and it's not just about the current cases, but it looks back at the entire history of the court and really important cases that maybe you hadn't heard of, and it talks about them. And it's from the same team of radio producers that brought you this show called Radio Lab, which is a very intensely produced. It's not just guys sitting around talking like other podcasts I could name, but it's like it's really reported and produced, yeah. Music and everything else. It's like a great history lesson. I love that. 1:30 tomorrow afternoon. If you're not listening to John Williams, you should be at the Old Town School of Folk Music's Square Roots Festival. That's the Fiddle Championship, the finals of the Midwest Fiddle and Banjo Championship, and my son Ben is in it. I didn't make the finals.
No kidding!
But my son Ben is in the
fiddle
finals.
I did not know that your son Ben picked up the fiddle like his pa.
And he plays it better than I do too. Isn't it always the way? But 1:30
wow,
at the Old Town
congrats.
School.
Congrats! Yeah. Well, have you handicapped this thing? What does the competition look like?
The competition is excellent. We were at the semifinals last night. There were 16 fiddlers in that, and boy, the guys who made the final, they were all really good. But the guys who made the final are excellent. He's going up against a Danish fiddler and an Irish fiddler, and he's an old-time
Are
American fiddler.
Are you kidding?
So it's going to be a battle of styles and stuff. So
USA, USA.
Exactly.
Well, next week, please report to us his championship victory.
I will.
I'm impressed either way, sir. Congrats.
Thanks.
A plug for me, but it's really for you, and that is if you go to WGNradio.com/events, I'm recommending that you do this. Attend my Teddy Roosevelt show. It's August 13th, 10 a.m. at the MAC, the Performing Arts Center at the College of DuPage. Tickets are... there's a couple hundred seats left, which means we've sold a lot, but you can still get in, WGNradio.com/events. Literally, as just weary as we all are of all of these conversations, to see Teddy Roosevelt buoyantly jump onto stage and entertain and make you laugh and feel good about being an American and everything that comes with that. That's the vibe you get.
History is great, isn't it? I mean, it's like when you can bring it to life like that, it really is terrific. And then you look at the show Hamilton and you look at things like what you're doing, and it's not just like reading a textbook. It's really engaging stuff. So I'm glad you're doing it.
Well, that's nice of you to say, and that's the truth, Eric. So WGNradio.com/events. Get tickets. They're not real expensive. And if you don't like the show, Eric will give you your money back.
Absolutely.
That's this week's edition of The Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams. Eric Zorn, you are taking next week off, I understand.
Yes, I am.
So, boy, Steve Bertrand and Krista McQuarrie, you'd better make it back. Jasmine Cooper has been the producer of this edition of The Mincing Rascals. Thank you to our engineer, Ben Cortez. And I will drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
Hey,